Hallo, wie geht's? Ich bin David Guetta, and welcome to BerlinBrigade.com podcast number 48. So without any further delay, let's get started with this podcast now. Joining me today is Larry Schweikart, and Larry Schweikart is a co-producer of this awesome documentary that I saw on PBS the other day, and it's called Rockin' the Wall. And he's also the co-author of A Patriot's History of the Modern World with Dave Dougherty. Now, I guess Dave Dougherty is the other author. Larry, thank you for taking time to join us here today, and welcome.
My pleasure.
Tell you what, let's just dive right into it. I was watching PBS the other day. It was on a weekend. It was kind of late, but there was this interesting show that was talking about music, Berlin, and Eastern Europe and the United States and the influence. And I was like, wait a minute, Berlin, music, this is awesome. So I jumped on the website and I found the name of the show and the documentary. Then I found your website. And you know what? I'm going to quit talking. Larry, tell us about you, how you got involved with this and how it all came to be. And then we'll just kind of, I'll be quiet.
Okay. Well, I'm a rock musician from the old days. I began as a drummer, and one of my groups eventually got to where we were almost ready to make it. We were opening for Steppenwolf and the James Gang and people like that. And then I made an abrupt profession switch and decided to go into history. And several years later here, I come around and I write a book called Seven Events That Made America America. And one of the seven events I chose was A Steel Guitar Rocks the Iron Curtain. And I've always been interested in how the music would you know, go through solid objects like the Berlin Wall, because, you know, it just would penetrate anything and could reach places that other kinds of political news might not reach. At about the same time, I ended up writing a book with Mark Stein, not the political commentator, but the keyboard player singer from the 60s era, 70s era group Vanilla Fudge. And he had set me up with interviews with all the people he worked with over the years, which was an incredible array of people from, you know, Billy Joel to Alice Cooper to, I mean, you name it, he's worked with them. And so I thought that the story of how music helped bring down the Iron Curtain would be a great story to put in a documentary form. And I've been trying to turn my larger book, A Patriot's History of the United States, which was the forerunner to Patriot's History of the Modern World, been trying to turn that into video for years, and I thought this would be a good trial run. If we can do this and do it successfully, we ought to be able to make a larger documentary about the Patriot's History book. So one thing led to another. I got some business support, got some background in how to set up a company and raise the money, and paired up with a filmmaker in California, Mark Leaf, excellent editor and documentary filmmaker, and we ended up shooting it on schedule and on budget, and it was terrific. We found all sorts of people from both sides of the Iron Curtain who either played rock and roll or, you know, listened to a lot of music, including Mother's Finest was one of my favorite groups in the movie. They a black group from Atlanta, Georgia, funk rock group. I don't think you'd say they got superstar status here in America. They kind of have a cult following, especially in the South and on the East Coast. But they're huge in Europe and especially Germany, and they were playing in East Berlin 2 weeks before the wall came down. And Leslie Mandoki's another one. Leslie was a drummer out of Hungary, student activist who resisted the communists. And he eventually escaped and became a leading music producer for Audi and Volkswagen commercials in Europe. So I think there's just a number of terrific stories in the film.
Wow, yeah. I mean, just you telling me, or you just giving us that intro there, and it's like, man, there's more stories than what I saw just in that show on PBS and in the documentary. I do have one question, and on schedule, on budget, really? Seriously? That's almost unheard of.
Yeah, I know. It was, well, I'll have to give credit to my business manager. I went to him, I said, can you help me raise, alright, the original deal was we were going to raise $50,000 and make a trailer and go to Hollywood and see if we could get somebody to put up the money for the real movie based on the trailer. And he said, well, it's just as easy to raise as much money as you need for the movie as it is to raise $50,000. So he showed me how to set up the legal and structural components, how to reassure investors that their money wouldn't be wasted, that you had a way of getting it back. Let me also mention that the PBS version, when you said that there's, you hadn't heard of some of these things, the PBS version is a one-hour version. The version you buy on the website is an 83-minute version, and it's much better. It contains a lot of the stories, including, I think, Leslie's escape story from Hungary. That's pretty cool.
Oh, definitely. That's, I did visit the website, and you mentioned it's rockinthewall.com or rockinthewall.com.
Correct.
It's all one word. So for those of you who want to go check it out, and of course, that will be in the show notes, so don't worry there, listeners. Wow, so that's pretty cool. Yeah, no, I got to see that one-hour version, and that got me hooked. And very intense.
And you know, a lot of the things that allowed us to shoot on budget and on schedule was dumb luck, or we were blessed, however you want to look at it. Leslie Mandoki, because he was shooting car commercials, was at the Detroit Auto Show, which is, I teach at the University of Dayton, and he was just 4 hours up the road. And we mentioned we wanted to interview him and that he'd be an integral part of the show, and he said, oh, don't even bring your cameras, just come on up, you can use my camera and camera crews. And you know, he in essence gave us a multi-thousand-dollar shoot free. So we got a lot of just really nice kind of gifts like that. We just happened to get a lot of people from Europe who were over here for one reason or another.
So it was it all played in your favor. So that's a good thing. It's like everything just aligned.
Yeah, I was even at a dinner with one of my investors, and I sit down and he says, "Yeah, well, my son-in-law is from Romania." And I said, "What?" And so he starts telling me about as a kid his. His experiences in Romania listening to the radio, we need to interview you. And so he gets in there. So it was one thing like that, one thing after another of people coming forward. We met a Russian woman, came over as kind of a mail order bride, and she told a remarkable story. She's from Ukraine and told about how they banned churches and prohibited Bibles in the Ukraine, but for some reason they let in the rock musical Jesus Christ Superstar. And she says, I was atheist, but not a communist, and I come to Jesus through Jesus Christ, the Superstar.
Wow. And that's interesting that they allow one thing but not the other. That is... But then again,
well,
they opened the door for that
then. I did some further research on Jesus Christ Superstar. It turns out it was the number one musical in the Soviet Union at that time, which is really just astounding. It shows you how hungry people were both for rock music and for, you know, the story of religion.
Yeah, and it just leaves itself to, like, well, you know, you open a door, can you really close it? And obviously not.
One of our interviewees was Shadow Morton. Shadow just died about 2 months ago. He was a legendary producer and had worked with Phil Spector. And Shadow, I'll just quickly tell you his story because in honor of the guy, it's an amazing story. He was not a musician, did not play an instrument, did not read music. He went to the Brill Building to visit a friend of his, a singer-songwriter, at the Brill Building, and which used to be known as Tin Pan Alley, where all of the songs were written. And this guy's over there banging on the piano in the nook across the hallway there, and Shadow didn't think it was very good at all, and he made some comment, and the guy said, "Well, you think you can do better?" And Shadow said, "Yeah, I know I can do better." Well, this guy had never written a song in his life, but he goes back to Jersey, and he comes up with a song, he gets an all-girl group, they record it on a little recorder, take it back the next week, and it's the Shangri-La's number one song, Remember, Walking in the Sand. And when he's done with that, he turns around and he writes another number one song, The Leader of the Pack. And this is astounding for a guy who doesn't read music and doesn't play an instrument. So he goes into production, as I said, with some of the really big guys, including Phil Spector, and he ends up producing Vanilla Fudge, and then he ends up producing Iron Butterfly when they do the famous song Inagata Da Vida. He's the producer in the studio, and he told us how they were really tight, how they were having all sorts of difficulty recording the song. So he told them that there was a problem with the equipment. They needed to get under the board and fix something and just to start rehearsing Inagata Da Vida. So they started, and Shadow had them turn the recording equipment on. And every time they'd look at him, he'd give them the keep going sign with his hand. And so that's when they started doing all the solos, and they ended up doing this drum solo, and by the time they're done, he says, all right, that's great. And they said, all right, shall we cut the song now? He said, you already cut it. Let's go on to the next one.
With Rock in the Wall, let's get back to it just for a second here. Or when did it first air? When was it? I saw that it said fall, but it didn't say when. Was it this past fall, 2012?
Yeah, it came out in November 2012 on PBS. It depended on the station, but I think the official launch was November 11th, 2012. We have just concluded a deal. I haven't signed it yet, but it looks very, very much as though we're going to go on Mark Cuban's Axis HD network as soon as it finishes its PBS run.
Wow, that's definitely another. That's a coup getting on that, getting up there with Mark Cuban's network, and that's going to be pretty interesting. So that'll definitely expose it to a wider audience, that's for sure. And then again, tell the story to another newer generation. And again, it's one of those that it's, how do you say it? It gets out there, and as time gets further and further along, the stories start becoming blurred. But definitely, I like what this one had to say. So it's a good job there, and definitely a coup, and good job getting on board with Mark Cuban and his network. And again, it's going to be a younger audience that's going to see that.
I regularly show it to my students. It's the educational side that's been selling Rock in the Wall has been doing very well. It's at Harvard, Vassar, all sorts of colleges. I was invited last year to my own university to a philosophy of music class, which I've never been invited to before, to talk on Rock in the Wall. So it is getting out to a younger group, and they're really quite, I think they're quite taken with the movie. I mean, the response to the movie has just been terrific. We haven't really had one critical review anywhere, and we've shown it at quite a few places besides obviously being on the networks.
Yeah, and again, you can't really go wrong, but like I said, with me, I was kind of biased, so I cannot give it a bad review, because again, it's in Berlin, it was music, you know, it was my youth when I was there in Berlin, well, my early adulthood, fresh out of basic training and straight to Berlin. And it was just awesome and just such exposure to all the music that was there. I mean, they just kept coming. I remember in June of 87, David Bowie was there.
Mm-hmm.
And he played right there on the grounds of the Reichstag. And of course, the wall is just behind the building. So speakers were just blaring to the east. And it was just kind of anybody that showed up that played there definitely played to the east.
Sure. And what's interesting, of course, one of the most famous concerts, and we couldn't get the music because they wouldn't let us get rights to Springsteen's music, but the most famous concert was Springsteen's concert in East Berlin in 88, and they let him in because the communists think he's anti-American guy and he's going to make all these political statements. And Springsteen plays a couple of songs and he stops and he says, I'm not here to praise or blame any political system or any country. I'm just here to play music. And of course, the commissars are hitting themselves in the head. Oh, he screwed up with this guy. And then he plays Born in the USA. Now, people who are familiar with the song Born in the USA know it's an anti-Vietnam War song. But let's be honest, Springsteen is not the most, he doesn't enunciate the best of singers. Many people can barely understand what he says. He's sort of like Mick Jagger in that regard. And so, to most people, Born in the USA, it's just, hey, well, that's a story about how great it is to be born in USA, and certainly that's what most East Europeans thought. Leslie Mandoki told us, he says, you know, we all wanted to be born in USA, he says, except some of the Germans. He says, all the rest of us want to be born in USA. So when Springsteen goes into Born in the USA, all these communist youth are over there singing Born in the USA, and they all want to be born in the USA. They all love America. And that had to distress the communist warlords pretty badly.
And, again, speaking from just being there in the city, yes, you could tell when things just, they didn't like things. And we're talking about the eastern side of the city, when those that were in charge, the powers that be, just didn't like the way things were going on the west, or things, something that was happening in the west, you could kind of just get a feeling for it. But then again, it's one of those that it changed from day to day, and obviously, by the time 89 rolled around, things had changed in a different direction. They weren't liking what was going on in their neck of the woods.
Well, you know, that speaks to Mother's Finest told me the story that we have in the interview in the film that, as I said, they played in East Berlin 2 weeks before the wall came down. And Glenn Murdoch told us that the last time they played, they took their tour bus over, as they always did, and it rolls over the area there, Checkpoint Charlie, where they go underneath the bus and make sure nobody's sneaking in or out. And they come on the bus with dogs and they sniff around. And they said an East German officer with a, you know, button down coat goes all the way down, comes on the bus and he says, who's the leader of the band? And Murdoch kind of waves because he didn't have a manager with him at the time. So I guess I am. And so he says, you know, let's go to the back of the bus. So he takes him to the back of the bus. Murdoch doesn't know he's going to get shot or what. And the officer says, so you are Murdoch? He says, I'm Glenn Murdoch. And he says, shh. And he's looking around the whole time like somebody's watching him. And he says, you not say anything about any of this to anyone. And he opens his jacket and he pulls out a Mother's Finest record album. And he hands it to Murdoch to sign. He says, brings the whole band back. And one at a time they had to come back and sign the guy's album. And he says, I can only bring one at a time. Next time we come over, I bring you another one. That was the last time, of course, they saw him.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That was a wonderful story that, as he was telling it, yes, in the video. Yeah, that was a great story. And it's kind of like, well, yes, that's really how it was. It just kind of got down to the point that, you know, they're just people just like us.
That story is also kind of funny because you have to listen closely. It's a G-rated film. There's no violence, drugs, or harsh language in it. But you have to listen closely because what Glenn says in the movie is, he says, he pulled out Another Mother Further, which is the name of one of their albums, Another Mother Further.
Yeah. Yeah. And I kind of heard something, but I wasn't too sure. But yeah, okay, now that you say it, I do recall. Yeah. Folks, you've got to watch this. It's called Rockin' the Wall, and it's rockinthewall.com is the website. You can get your copy there. Larry, tell me, what was the most unexpected thing you learned about music's influence on Eastern Europe and the end of communism in Eastern Europe?
I knew things were regimented, but I didn't know, as one of our Bulgarian guys said, that In Bulgaria, they had a prison on an island in the Danube. And it was so secret that the people in Bulgaria didn't know it even existed. They thought that what they were seeing was I guess it's Austria, which is across, I'd have to look at my map, but it's the other nation across the border. And in reality, it was an island that was Bulgarian territory in the middle of the river that they kept as a secret prison, and they stashed people away. And in the movie, we show maps of before and after, and the way this was treated in the Bulgarian geography classes. So that was kind of shocking.
Yes, yes. As I was watching it, I pulled it up on Google, and I Googled that location. I did finally find that island, and I basically just went down the entire Danube. But yeah, it's very interesting. I could see how it could, you know, if you live there and you're being told, no, that doesn't exist, that's not ours, how easy it is to say, oh, that's theirs.
And because again, really?
Literally, it's right in the middle.
Yeah.
It's not leaning towards one or the other. It's right in the middle. So, but again, it's also very scary that, yeah, you know, it was right there in plain sight too. and what it was.
You know, and other than that, I have to say, I actually was not surprised by much we found in the movie, much of the testimony that we heard from people, much that we heard from the rock and rollers. I wanted us to go out of our way to do kind of a montage of different rock and rollers saying, you know, rock and roll music is freedom. It's freedom. It's about freedom. And we have a section in there where almost seven or eight groups or individuals talk about, yeah, rock and roll is freedom. And my main thesis in both the chapter of the book and the movie is that even if you don't understand the lyrics, the structure of rock and roll conveyed the American notion of freedom, because the band would start together as a band, they'd end together as a band, but always in the middle you have the solo, whether it's the guitar solo or the saxophone solo or the keyboard solo, there's always a solo, and that perfectly exemplifies kind of the American and Western notion of freedom, that yeah, you do things together, but you never lose your individual identity. And you can really just contrast that with something like, you know, Mao's China, where everybody had to wear the same little goofy uniform.
Here at BerlinBrigade.com, you're kind of talking to an audience that did experience this and did see this firsthand, no matter when we were there. It's obvious that the Eastern side, that the East was definitely hungry for what we had. And even the West Berliners were hungry for what we had, even though they had it. They still wanted more. They wanted to get a different look and feel for what they were experiencing. But for somebody who's never, ever, you know, just somebody, you know, middle America, just somebody who's never set foot in Europe or to even understand that, you know, this kind of thing was going on, because, again, they would see what was going on. Well, you know what? Let me just say it this way. The kids nowadays, I know we talked about, you know, just that they're, you know, you're exposing them to this new way of, or not new way, you're exposing them to what happened, what the real deal was. But what would you say that today, the kids now, or really anybody who's lived after or who was born after the wall, there we go, finally I get there, what would you say would be the biggest takeaway, and how could they apply it to what's going on now?
Well, we go out of our way. This is a picture about music, but it's also a picture about history. And that's why I think it's a wonderful teaching tool. I recommend it to homeschool audiences all over the place, because it's a great teaching tool about the Cold War and, you know, what the wall meant, what the Iron Curtain was, how it came to be put up. We wrap in the Cuban Missile Crisis. We wrap in Vietnam in the 60s Mark Leaf wrote the script, and I think he did a fantastic job of tying in all these threads of history that show what was involved. The wall was, of course, a part of the larger Cold War. It was a very symbolic part. But at the same time, you know, and our focus is clearly on West going East, that is, Western music going East. It was having such an impact on them, and we could not really tell this story as well as we'd like to. It would have taken another hour. But already there were rock bands and rock and roll in Russia, in Hungary, in Romania, East Germany. And that comes out in the book, Seven Events That Made America. And one of the things that I found very interesting of that was that the response of the authorities, almost universally, was to try and co-opt rock and roll. They knew they couldn't stop it. So what they tried to do was to offer goodies to rock musicians who would slant their music towards support of the state. They would give them food vouchers, housing vouchers, whatever. And in Russia, for example, a number of people took them up on that and became, in essence, state government propaganda bands. But a lot would not, and they paid a terrible price. I mean, literally, they'd starve, or they'd be kicked out of their houses. Some were put in jail. So that's an interesting side of the Cold War that people don't know. In 1984, for example, there was a tour of America of four USSR rock and roll bands, and they did an album called Red Wave. Now, it's not a very good album. It sucks, actually. But you can hear in their music how they were listening to American bands and trying to copy them. They're about 20 years behind, but they're trying. And so you have this germination of rock bands and rock music behind the Iron Curtain, that's kind of the other side of the story that we couldn't tell. Since we did Rock in the Wall, we've gone on to a second film project called Other Walls to Fall, about how music penetrates and changes other closed societies. The phrase came from Rudy Sarzo, bass player of Quiet Riot, who was Cuban-born, and his family escaped Castro's Cuba. And he said, you know, there is one other wall to fall, or there's another wall to fall in Cuba. And this is before Ronnie James Dio dies. He says, I want to play with Dio on Castro's grave, the last in line.
Wow. Yeah, that would have been something to see and hear. However, it's kind of, unfortunately, the other way around. So, yeah, now that you bring that up, Other Walls to Fall, what are the other projects speaking of that you've got going on?
Well, Other Walls to Fall includes a number of celebrities, such as, you probably would never put their names together in a sentence, Yanni, Busta Rhymes, Clint Black, and then we have musicians from all sorts of oppressed countries, a heavy metal band from inside Tehran. We have a Cambodian rapper who's been on his country's death list. We have a guy named Salman Ahmed who is known as the Bob Dylan of Islam. He's a Pakistani. So it's just an eclectic group of people talking about music in their homelands and the role that music plays in trying to penetrate and change some of these more closed societies. In addition to that project, we finally got to the point that we're developing a Patriot's History of the United States into a two different patterns. We're doing one version is a limited theatrical release, and then the second version will be a six-part television series. So we're kind of moving ahead on a lot of fronts here. It's challenging, but it's also quite fun.
It sounds like it. And of course, that is on, for more information on that, everybody, you can find that at rockinthewallstudios.com.
Correct.
And that's where all of that awesome stuff. And that looks like fun. And so you think maybe we're going to be able to get like that LL Cool J thing that's going on right now, with, I forgot that guy's name. It doesn't matter. He's country music. well, it does to the country music fans, but maybe a little Yanni and Busta Rhymes, kind of maybe a compilation from those two.
You mean a mosh?
Yeah.
Do a mosh. One of my, for all your listeners, one of my favorite moshes is Riders on the Storm by The Doors with Rapture by Blondie. And I have to tell you, when we were just starting out, my very first band, we had a singer who could have, if you closed your eyes, you thought you were listening to Jim Morrison. I mean, he had the inflection, he had the emotion, and he could just nail every Doors song. And so I sent him this mosh of Blondie and Riders on the Storm, and he thought it was an abomination. This is terrible. You know, nobody should do this. And I think it's one of my favorite songs. I love it.
Yeah, that'd be neat. But yeah, no, I definitely need to check that one out. I have not, or I don't recall hearing it, but of course, it's been a while. So again, it could be out there and something I heard maybe in the past, but definitely something to check out.
Google Rapture Riders and you'll find it. Rapture Riders.
Let's see, what else? Well, I mean, that's pretty much it. Tell me a little bit more about your situation there with Mark Cuban. How did that kind of pan out, and where's that going? Ultimately, where do you see it going?
Well, we found a distributor, an agent who has worked with Mark in the past, and we have an oral agreement. I haven't finalized any of the terms yet, so it could disappear tomorrow. But it looks as though we're going to go on there as soon as our deal with PBS is up. And I hope that once that goes, that Other Walls to Fall will be also appearing on there. We're not quite finished with Other Walls to Fall. If you're interested in becoming a movie maker and helping out in any way, investing or anything, you can give me a call and go to the website and you can see my email and get a hold of me there. But we're almost done with that. And there's a couple more people we'd really like to get in. There's a group out of Pakistan, Jal the Band, J-A-L, that I've really been trying to get in this movie. They're probably the biggest band in Southeast Asia. And we just haven't quite had the money to get them in. But we're pretty close to wrapping it up.
Nice, very nice. And that definitely something, if it's anything like Rock in the Wall was, It's definitely going to be one of those, going to get somebody's attention, and people are definitely going to be talking about it. And that's a good thing. And that's always a good thing. When people
are talking. You can see that trailer for Other Walls to Fall and for Patriots History are both at Rock in the Wall Studios under project. So just go there and you can see all the stuff we're doing.
Rockinthewallstudios.com, and everybody, that link will also be in the show notes, so don't worry about that. Let's see. You know, anything else we haven't covered that you definitely want to tell us about what's going on?
Well, I guess I should mention that since you talked about the book, Patriots History of the Modern World came out in October, and it goes up to 1945. It was just too big a subject to cover in one single volume. The second volume will be out in December, Patriots History of the Modern World, 1945 to 2012, and it's just an overall, you know, everything I write isn't fantastic. I've written probably 30, 40 books, but that's a great book. It's a great overview history of the world for anyone who's interested, and I'll give you another website for that. You go to our website, Patriots History USA, all one word, patriotshistoryusa.com, and you can get any of my books and that one there, too.
Got it. PatriotsHistory.com also will be on the show notes.
Okay, it's Patriots History USA. Got to get the USA in there. PatriotsHistoryUSA.com.
I'm at it, and it's all one word. PatriotsHistoryUSA.com, all one word, and that link will be in the show notes.
Great.
Not
thank
the other
you.
One. The correct one will be on there. You know, as you were saying it, you said the first volume goes up to 1945. Mm-hmm. If I remember correctly, Mel Brooks's History of the World Part 1 goes up to just before 1938. So it's kind of interesting.
Yeah,
two different takes on the world
character.
History.
Yeah. I mean, he deserves his spot in the Hall of Fame, if nothing else, for Blazing Saddles.
Oh, yeah, without a doubt. Without a doubt. Classic. But yeah, definitely another classic is what we were looking at and what we were talking, you know, what we've been talking about, Rocking the Wall. I like the show. I like what I saw. Definitely going to order a copy to get the other, what's it, 23 minutes of that didn't show up on the PBS show. So folks, if you're watching it, you've seen it on PBS, there's still another 23 minutes. Am I correct?
Yep. And if you order it from the Rock in the Wall, website, rockinthewall.com, you actually get the 83 minute version.
Yep. There you go. So there's still more than what was aired on PBS, and that's pretty cool. That's good marketing right there. You don't give the entire story. You give some of it, and then it's like, well, you want the rest? Come on over.
PBS has their own little rules, and we argued for the 83 minute version. It's meant to be shown as an hour and a half version because the stories, what we had to cut, it's just really, it doesn't do it justice to show it in just under an hour. But you know, we had to sell it that way, so we had to sell it.
Well, sir, I think we're pretty much come down to the end of our conversation. But as always, I do leave the mic open if there is again something else that we've overlooked, haven't talked about, a point you wanted to definitely make. Sir, the microphone is yours.
No, thanks. I think we've touched on all the points. I just urge people, if you can, get a copy of the movie, go to the website, get the 83-minute version of the movie. You'll love it. If you're a reader, if you're of a reading mind, please check out A Patriot's History of the Modern World or Seven Events That Made America, and I think you'll love those books.
Definitely. And folks, again, the links will be on the show notes on the website and on the iTunes podcast. You'll just need to right click on the podcast, get info, and the information will be there on the lyrics section of your iTunes download. Again, we've been talking with Larry Schweikert. He is the co-producer of Rockin' the Wall, an awesome documentary about music's influence on Eastern Europe and the fall of the Berlin Wall and the end of communism and the world as we know it today. Larry, thank you for taking the time to join us here. And again, thank you very much.
Thanks, Dave. I appreciate your time.
Oh, thank you, sir. Thank you. Well, I hope you enjoyed that interview with Larry Schweikert, and I hope you get a chance to see the documentary Rock in the Wall. There we go. Rockin' the Wall. Again, there we go. And check it out. And again, it's so timely that this documentary that was made and aired over PBS and now is available to you. just happens to be, well, I happen to see it, or, you know, this episode of the podcast happens to air, go live in May of 2013. Because for those of you in Berlin or traveling to Berlin, there's something very special, and it has to do with American music. And I do invite you to visit our good friends over at the Allied Museum in Berlin, at the former Outpost Theater, the former Major Nicholson Library, across the street from the U.S. Consulate there on Clay Alley. I do invite you to go on over, and the link is on the website to the Allied Museum and about the temporary exhibition that's going to be on. It's called From G.I. Blues to G.I. Disco, The American Way of Music in Germany. Starting May 24, 2013, the Allied Museum will be completely devoted to music. The temporary exhibition, From G.I. Blues to G.I. Disco, shows how the American soldiers stationed in Germany influenced German youth and musical culture through their music and lifestyles. For this exhibition, the Allied Museum is collaborating with the Berlin DJ duo G.I. Disco, a.k.a. Daniel W. Best and Kirsten Grossman. Musical genres such as rock and roll and hip-hop helped to shape the whole attitude towards life of many young people in Germany. Over the decades, G.I.s were also ambassadors of American popular culture. Elvis Presley played this role perfectly during his army days in Germany in the 1950s. Americans and Germans met in soldiers' clubs and later discos as well. The German music and club scene drew important inspiration from the GIs. In 1986, several people were killed and many more injured in the bombing of the Berlin disco La Belle. We invite young people and the young at heart to plunge into the exhibition's multimedia presentations, from jazz on the military radio station AFN, Armed Forces Network, and the jukebox of the 1960s to hip-hop. Music from the six decades will be available for listening on a wave of sound, quote-unquote. In video contribution, eyewitnesses such as club legend Rolf Eden, hey, sound familiar? Entertainer Ron Williams, or rapper and DJ Mitchie Beck, the Fantastischen Vier turntable rocker, will present their personal recollections of the GIs, clubs, and music. The exhibition will also give visitors the opportunity to demonstrate their own DJing skills or to dance. A CD will appear to accompany the exhibition, which will take listeners on a musical journey through time. There will also be a program of various events throughout the exhibition period. This is straight from the Allied Museum's website. Folks, again, if you are in Berlin, perfect time to even narrow focus what we talked about in this podcast and what is the video Rockin' the Wall, the documentary. So without a doubt, I do invite you, head on over to the Allied Museum and tell them BerlinBrigade.com sent you. They'd love to hear from you. Before I start wrapping it up, I definitely want to get this out to everybody. Listen, especially for those of you in the United Kingdom and in Germany that are listening to us here on the BerlinBrigade.com podcast. Well, thank you for listening. But I also want you to know that now, one of our favorite authors, Rebecca Cantrell, her series, her Hannah Vogel series, all of the books are now available in the United Kingdom and in Germany. So definitely head on over to Amazon.de or Amazon.co.uk, or head on over to your local bookstores and pick up a copy of A City of Broken Glass and all of the other books by Rebecca Cantrell, A Night of Long Knives, A Game of Lies, and of course, the one that starts it all, A Trace of Smoke. Definitely congratulations to Rebecca Cantrell for getting that done and getting the word out and putting her words into, well, again into English, but British English, I guess, and German. So now it's available to a wider audience. So then you've heard me talk about her. Now you can read about her. Okay, everybody, the time has come to wrap up this episode, episode number 48 of the BerlinBrigade.com podcast. I thank you for listening, and I do invite you to follow us on Twitter. Yes, we're active on Twitter, and our handle is at BerlinBrigade there on Twitter. And you can also follow us on Facebook, Pinterest, and a couple of other things. But you know what? You can do that by going to the BerlinBrigade.com homepage, and our links are there. Subscribing to the podcast, a couple of other things. So again, thank you for stopping by. Until next time, there will be a next time. This is Dave Guerra. Thank you. Auf Wiedersehen. Tschüss.
The Berlin Brigade.com podcast is a Dave Gehrer production. Thank you.